So there are trees, and then there are celebrity trees, famous individuals, like the sequoia named General Sherman, which is the biggest tree on the planet. Now, why was a tree named for a Civil War general who laid waste to the South? Well, cultural historian Dagan Miller uncovered the story after he went to Sequoia National Park with his girlfriend. It's where they got engaged and where he set a chapter of a book called This Radical Land. Steve Paulson wanted to know more about this first encounter with a mythic tree.
So sequoias can grow up to about 300 feet tall. They're enormous. They can live to be 3,000-ish years old, 3,000 plus. Historically, there are two reactions to the sequoias. And the first is to see them and just be stunned with the wonder of these enormous, some of the oldest living things in the world, the biggest living things in the world. The other historical reaction has been to sort of shrug. And I will admit that the first time I saw a sequoia, I was sort of like, that's a pretty big tree.
What's the big deal?
Partly because that California landscape, everything is humongous, right? So the Sierra Nevada mountains in that section, they're amongst the tallest mountains in the lower 48 states. It wasn't until my now wife and I got right up to the sequoia, tried to wrap our arms around one, that we started to feel just the enormity of this living being. And there was one sequoia that had sort of been hollowed out to some extent by a fire. And she got inside and stretched out her arms.
She got inside the tree.
She got inside the tree, stretched out her arms as far as she could and couldn't touch the inner bark. We've lived in apartments smaller than that.
So she actually walked inside.
She actually walked inside. And then it started to hit home, right? That they're unparalleled.
Yeah.
The enormity of what we were witnessing.
So there's a whole history here as well of how people have lived among the sequoias, how they've fought over this land.
Yes.
Where native people once lived, right?
Exactly.
And then the white people moved in.
Exactly.
And basically pushed out the native people.
Yeah. And the history is fascinating. So basically the accepted story is that sequoias weren't really known to Euro-Americans until about 1852. And that's for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons is that the sequoias are inaccessible. They're in this about 250-mile strip, north to south, and they only grow above 5,000 feet and below 8,000 feet. And sequoias don't grow in forests. Sequoias sort of cluster in a few trees. So they were essentially unknown until the gold rush.
1848,
right? And that was when the world started to say, oh my God, there is this there is this beast out there, this being that has so far been unknown, even unimagined by European minds.
So there are some individual trees, sequoias, that are actually famous in themselves. And one took on the name General Sherman. After the famous William Tecumseh Sherman, the guy who, you know, at the end of the Civil War, marched through the South. And then after that, he had a second career as kind of a U.S. Army guy fighting the Indians.
Right. So one of the things that happens in the post-Civil War U.S. is the military mission of the country really turns westward, really turns towards these wars of extermination against the American Indians. And William T. Sherman, William Tecumseh Sherman, he's the main general in this Western campaign. So the sequoias are the biggest trees in the world. They're not the tallest. They're not necessarily the widest, but apparently by volume of wood, they're the biggest trees in the world. The biggest of the sequoias in 1879 was named the General Sherman. And there's a deep irony here. Sequoia comes from the name of a Cherokee Indian who is supposed to have invented a written Cherokee language, Sequoia.
So the name honors the local Cherokees.
Right, the local Cherokees, who were marched out on the Trail of Tears, marched out of Alabama and the Southwest in the 1830s. And then in 1879, the biggest sequoia is named for a famous Indian killer, William Tecumseh Sherman. So the irony that someone who is, you know, all for exterminating the Indians, that his name gets overlaid on top of a tree whose scientific name is meant to honor an American Indian who has marched out on the Trail of Tears, you know, there are many layers of sort of head-scratching irony here in the naming of the sequoia.
The story gets even more complicated
because
then there was this little band of radical anarchists who basically move into the sequoias, stake an ownership to it, actually rename General Sherman, the sequoia tree, they rename it Karl Marx.
Right, right. So, right. You know, it's If you made this up, no one would believe it. They'd be like, oh, this is a trashy novel. This would never happen. Well, let me back up a little bit. In California, in the U.S. in general, in the post-Civil War, there was lots of sort of radical politics really driven by the politics of labor. In the mid-1880s, 1885, 1886, a couple of labor organizers get together, and they're trying to figure out what's going to be the best method for overthrowing the capitalist system in the U.S. And what a number of them hit on is that they need to create their own commune, their own community. And this band of anarchists and socialists and political and economic radicals staked a claim to a huge tract of land that included the giant forest, that included General Sherman, and they started a commune that they called the Kuwea Commonwealth.
So they actually just move into this forest.
They moved into this
way
forest.
Way up high in the mountains, set up their commune.
Set up their commune. The communards weren't interested in logging the sequoias. In fact, they had sort of a preservation scheme. They were going to log some of the smaller, more manageable trees. The plan was actually quite successful. It was successful because in that part of Central California, there's not much timber, right? So for the settlers who wanted to build, they ended up having to buy their timber from Northern California. How do you get the timber from Northern California down to Central California? You ship it on the Southern Pacific Railroad. Hmm. And the Southern Pacific Railroad was like the Facebook of its day. It was this enormous corporation. It was one of the most hated corporations of the time, controlled an enormous amount of wealth and political power. Well, the communards were successful enough that they started to cut into the Southern Pacific's profit margin.
I assume the Southern Pacific was the archenemy of these commune
exactly.
people.
And the Southern Pacific took this radical political economic threat very, very seriously. Some of the fixers from the Southern Pacific Railroad got together with some of the incipient conservationists and preservationists and helped pass legislation in Congress creating Sequoia National Park. Hmm. And they created the park that was big enough so that the park ended up seizing and extinguishing the communards' property.
This is a huge irony here.
Right.
This major capitalist entity comes in and creates a national park to drive out the radical anarchists.
Right. And it was nice that the trees were preserved, but also it was very much about the preservation of capital, the preservation of power, the preservation of monopoly.
So what happened to that tree that we were talking about, which had been General Sherman, then
renamed Karl Marx,
which we should point out is the biggest tree in
the
world.
Right. And I should say that nearly as soon as the communards got there to the giant grove, they streamed into the giant grove and rebaptized the Sherman tree, Karl Marx. When the park is created in 1890, it takes the cavalry to actually drive the communards out, and then the cavalry reverts the name back to the General Sherman. And General Sherman stands today. You can go visit it. And it is known as the General Sherman.
Why did you want to write about all of this?
So one of the things that's amazing to me about trees is that they're objects of science. They're biological. They're ecological. But they're also, they've always been objects of human culture. Anywhere you go in the world, anywhere you go in time, where there were trees and there were humans, human life is intertwined with the life of trees, which means that trees are witnesses to our time on Earth, to all of human history. A tree that's as old, a 3,000-year-old tree, right? I mean, that gets us back to the Romans. Civilizations have come and gone. Economies have come and gone. Ideas have come and gone. The idea that there's something that's living that you can touch, that you can wrap your arms around, that's seen this span of human history, but that's also mute, right? It can't tell us the human history.
Or at least we can't understand it.
One of the things that I think trees have long been is this sort of mystery for humans to reflect upon what we're doing on Earth, what we're doing with each other or to the non-human world. And I found this mystery just completely beguiling. And I wrote this book and I wrote this story about the sequoias in part to figure out what it was that my then girlfriend and I saw back in 2005 in this trip where we decided we wanted to get married. What did these things mean? What were we doing?
That's Dagan Miller. He was talking with Steve Paulson about his new book, This Radical Land, A Natural History of American Descent.